Nick Maton, the batter. He's 0 for 1. A walk and a strikeout tonight. The pitch. Maton swings, lines it to right, coming on for it, and it goes under the glove of Ward, and now goes all the way to the wall. JT around third. He's going to come home and score, and around to third goes Maton. As Ward came in, tried to lean over and make the catch. He didn't. It gets under his glove, and it's another run home to the Phillies in an 8-0 Phillies lead.
It was last night when everything went perfectly and the Phils win it 10-0, although I guess Maton did get hurt later. Todd Zalecki, our friend from MLB.com, joins us. Todd, any update on Maton early this morning?
Not this morning, but he got an x-ray yesterday after the game. They called it a right shoulder sprain with an SP sprain. He's going to get a MRI today, but he had difficulty raising his shoulder, his arm over his head last night, just getting dressed and just, you know, just moving in general. So he landed on it pretty good. Now, he said he did not feel a pop or anything like that, but I mean, I would be surprised if he's back out there tonight.
All right, well, let's talk about the manager. Rob Thompson was asked yesterday, I think you asked the question, how he will be different from Joe Girardi, and maybe he gave a little hint or two, but you've been around this club and you've seen him since, 2018, I believe, as the bench coach. How do you think he might be different?
Well, I think the big thing, and that's why I asked that question, because I said, do you pitch Corey Knebel on that Tuesday in Atlanta? Because that was, to me, a huge, huge loss. You know, Bryce Harper hits that home run. You're about to steal a game in Atlanta, win the first two games of that four-game series, and then you're very rigid in how you use your closer who wants to pitch, and then you don't pitch him, then you lose. So the fact that he says, it's June, I'm definitely open to it. And, so I think in that sense, he's going to be more open to kind of going for the jugular there. I understand if it's early in the season and the team is playing well, maybe you protect Corey Knebel at that time. But when things are going bad, I think you have to go for it. So I think Rob is going to be more open to that. The other difference I thought, which was interesting, is, and Dave alluded to this, and Rob talked about this a little bit as well, that he's really going to make a point to go through the clubhouse often and talk to the players often. I saw that a lot with Charlie Manuel when he was here. He was always in the clubhouse, walking through, come up to guys. And even just a dumb comment, a silly comment, yep. Charlie was in there a lot. Didn't see it a lot with Joe. Now, in fairness, wasn't in the clubhouse the last 2 years of Joe. So I don't know how often he was in there. But this year, the times I was in there this year, and then spring training as well, didn't see him in there a lot. So maybe he's going to try to make more of a connection with the guys. Not saying that there was a clubhouse problem, so to speak, but maybe just be a little bit more in tune with the players, what they want, what they like, what they don't like. Rob said as much yesterday.
Todd, I know it's more difficult for you, as you just noted. You're not in the clubhouse the way you used to be. So I know that's where you used to be able to judge stuff like vibe, like feeling, like emotion. And you got to wait till the game starts and then be able to judge from that. Well, 10-0, pretty good first vibe and emotion for the team. How do you go about judging that? Can you get a feel? I know you're allowed on the field before the game, which isn't the same as being in the clubhouse. How do you get the feeling over the next, couple of days, couple of weeks, couple of months that the vibe on the Phillies has improved?
Yeah, so, we are fortunately now we're back in there a little bit pregame and obviously postgame. Now we can go back in there. So we get that little snapshot of what it's like. There was more energy yesterday, but in talking to the players postgame, they won 10-0. And I've always been a believer, guys, that Charlie Manuel said this all the time. Anytime they went through a dead stretch offensively, we would go, man, you guys look like you're flat. Looks like you guys have no energy. He goes, yeah, we have nobody on base. Of course you're going to look like you're flat and have no energy. So I feel like there was some of that there. The offense wasn't doing what it was supposed to do, so the team looked flat. But I think the change that was made could motivate these guys a little bit, maybe snap them out of the funk. I asked Nick Castellanos that. I said, do you think this could serve as a kick in the butt for you guys? And he said, yeah, I hope so, because a guy just lost his job. And so that tells us that things aren't going well. They knew things weren't going well, but now because of their play, a guy lost his job. So I think that can maybe be provide a potential spark. I don't know how long it lasts, but you know, it could provide a little bit of a spark going into a schedule that really kind of eases up the next couple of weeks.
We're talking to Todd Zielecki of MLB.com. Follow him on Twitter at Todd Zielecki. And I'm asking you to interpret, right? A lawyer would tell me that I'm not allowed to do this, but do you think they feel bad that they cost him his job? Do they care that they cost him his job?
Yeah, I do. I do. This wasn't a situation where they were chomping at the bit to get Joe out of there, and they're like, oh my gosh, thank God. Now we can finally relax and play like the way we're capable for playing. Like, you know, I've covered, you know, managers where players griped a lot, and I didn't get that sense from Joe. So, you know, I think...
Yeah, but that sounds neutral. Like, okay, we didn't hate
right,
him. But
right.
Did they,
yeah,
did
right.
they
I
like
think,
him?
I think, they definitely respected him as a baseball guy. I think they liked him. But I wrote this a little bit yesterday. Joe was not going to be confused for Charlie. Like I said, like he wasn't a hangout, joke around, chit-chat, pat a guy in the back... You know, make again, like Charlie was great with just silly jokes, and I know people are gonna like, what does that have to do with it? But just that connecting aspect of it.
Yeah.
I don't think Joe had that. Joe does not have that type of personality. He didn't have that type of personality with us. I mean, not that that matters, but Charlie could just sit there and talk to you and tell a hilarious story. Joe really wasn't that guy. Joe was all business. So in that sense, maybe it loosens these guys up.
Todd, Glenn asked me first segment today, is this a change for change's sake, or are they still actually very much in this thing? Well, the standings say they are. They're only three games out of that third wild card spot. Dombrowski pulled the plug on Girardi yesterday. We'll see if there are early returns with Rob Thompson. But this team needs to do more, and there is a glaring hole in center field. Is that Dombrowski's next step? He took a shot with the manager, and we'll see what Rob Thompson can deliver. Are the Phillies going to double down and be aggressive and try and fill a major hole like center field?
Well, you know, I think it depends how they come out of these next few weeks. You know, they play these next two against the Angels, then they go to Milwaukee, which is a very good team. But then after that, I think, like, they play 13 games in a row against losing teams, bad teams. So if they get on a roll there, and now all of a sudden they're a little bit closer to the Giants, even if they're not at 500, because they are buried pretty deep. You'd have to go on a heck of a run to pull out of, you know, to get over 500 in a couple weeks. But I think if they start showing some life, the offense starts rounding into shape, then I think you could see Dave sit there and go, okay, how can we address our deficiencies, which, you know, they have a lot of them. One of them possibly being center field, one of them being the bullpen, you know, so they have some maneuvers to do, but they have to prove it. They have to go out and prove it.
All right, one of them being center field, one of them being the bullpen. Todd, we've been talking now for a few years. I believe that exact sentence has come up in every one of those conversations over the last however many years, which gets me to a point. Jim Salisbury asked a really good question yesterday at the news conference of Dave Dombrowski, and he said, is this problem systemic? They drafted three outfielders in the first round, and none have made it, which is why they need to sign those free agents. The last four managers have all been under 500. None of them made the playoffs, so maybe the issue more than the manager is scouting and development. I mean, I hope Moniak makes it, but... it's a hope and a prayer. They've been through the parade of center fielders already this year. You know, we're seeing Odubel. Is the Phillies problem, this is the easiest question you'll get asked this week, is the Phillies problem one of they're hiring the wrong managers, or they have a systemic problem?
I think it's a systemic problem, and I think it, you know, like it's easy to, somebody has to take the fall, so it had to be Joe Girardi. Just like it had to be Gabe Kapler. Then what happens? Gabe Kapler goes to San Francisco with a really well front office that has drafted and developed players well, and he wins 107 games last year. I don't think Gabe just suddenly became a good manager, just like I don't think Terry Francona suddenly became a good manager once he got the Red Sox. He joined an organization that was just better positioned to win. I think a lot of this problem, and I've been listening the past, you know, I listen all the time to WIP, and I hear a lot of people say, it's John Middleton? Is it, it's Dave Dombrowski? And for constructing this roster, it's Joe Girardi. It's Rhys Hoskins, whatever, right? To me, this all goes back to Andy McPhail and the rebuild that he bungled beginning in 2015. He really set this organization back. When Ruben lost his job, when Andy took over, I'm telling you, every person in baseball said, now that's a team I would like to be a GM for. I mean, the Phillies are at the beginning of a rebuild, so they're going to have a ton of high draft picks. And then you know John Middleton is going to spend a boatload of money to kind of fill in the gaps wherever they may be. Now that's the best job in baseball right now, Phillies GM. Well, Andy McPhail hires Matt Klentak. And then he basically takes his hand off the wheel and just lets this thing kind of run aground. And so they don't draft well. They don't develop well. They don't do a great job making trades, signing free agents, Sands, Bryce Harper, Zach Wheeler, et cetera. And now Dave Dombrowski comes in, and he's looking around going, like, where do I start? So I think there's a lot of that. Like, he only has so much money and only so many moves he can make because he has such a bad farm system to deal with. And so that's why I think they're in this bad position that they are, is because they really messed up that rebuild beginning in 2015 with Andy McPhail.
All right, Todd, let me get real narrow focused with you. One player who kind of fits into what you were just discussing. They signed Francisco Morales as a very young pitcher. Develop him, bring him through the system, 5 years in the minor leagues, gets off to a really good start at Reading, issues in the bullpen. They kind of force-feed him up to the big leagues. He pitches a game in Seattle where he looks like a killer. The slider is just blowing people away, 3 strikeouts in 2 innings. He gets into a second game against the Dodgers. Did hold on and get the save, even though he walked 3 guys. But he did get the last out, which was necessary, and then he's gone. They just sent him out. They had to clear a roster spot to get Eflin back from the COVID list. He's back down in the minor leagues. I've seen enough of Connor Brogdon. I've seen enough of Norwood. Why isn't this kid in the big leagues right now?
Great question. I could not agree with you more. Morales he has the potential to be a big time relief pitcher. And for me, I've seen enough of James Norwood to say, let's give Morales a shot. He's got a wipeout slider. He's got a good fastball. I think he is a future late inning reliever type of guy, maybe even better than that. And so, yeah, I'm in 100% agreement. When things aren't going well, he had a little bit of command issues that game in LA, but it was a second big league appearance. So, in Reading this season, he has struck out a boatload of hitters, and he hasn't really walked that many. He's been pretty good with his command. So I say bring him up, and hopefully sooner rather than later.
All right, Todd, I was unaware of this, but Andy McPhail is on line 4. He had something he wanted to say to you.
If we don't, we don't.
Exactly right. I mean, I think people forget about, Dave Dombrowski, he signed a couple corner outfielders that are really DHs. The defense is a huge issue. It's been an issue like that for 10 years. But you have to remember, I'm not excusing him or anything like that. They have to do a better job with roster construction, but they really set back the organization a long time with the way they drafted and developed talent and the way they made trades and all that stuff.
All right, last question, because as you know, you can pretty much now bet almost anything, any kind of futures you want. I want to take all my money and I want to go bet online as to who is the next Phillies manager. Todd Zielecki, I trust your judgment on all of these things. Who is, I assume that, the rest of the year we get Thompson. Who is the Phillies manager on opening day 2023?
Oh, man, that is a fantastic question. And I have not, I would really have to think about that, Glenn. And I don't have an answer for you right now.
You're deferring on me.
I'm going to defer on you. I really couldn't say who that might be coming up through the ranks. It could be like a hot bench coach of that. Teams always seem to poach guys like that. Maybe, hey, you know what? Somebody asked me this yesterday. If the Phillies play well and they make the playoffs, it's obviously going to be Rob Thompson. But what if they play well enough to come close? maybe they give Rob Thompson another shot. It'll be interesting
right,
to see.
I guess that's what I'll bet my money on. All right. Todd Zielecki, thank you so much. By the way, Todd is the author of the terrific best-selling biography, Doc, The Life of Roy Halladay. I read it and thought it was terrific. Todd, seems like Father's Day's coming up. Might be a good gift.
Absolutely, yeah. You can go to buytoddslucky.com. I'll even sign it and send it to you and personalize it for your dad.
There you go. Todd, great stuff. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
All right, there you go. Todd Zielecki. Jody, your takeaway?
I'm with him. I understand, as fans, we always want to be looking at the big picture and looking down the road. Let's see if Rob Thompson can get to 2-0 before we start to figure out who's going to be the Phillies manager in 2023.
I just, you know, got to throw that in there. I know.
Because that's what the fans want to know. It's a very good question because we're playing for the fans, but maybe it's because I am rooting for Rob Thompson as wholeheartedly as I am. I want to be able to root for him and go, yeah, he's going to be the manager for more than just 110 games or whatever the Phillies got left this year.
By the way, when you looked at him yesterday, you watched the thing, you watched it on TV, or you've seen him before.
Sure.
I saw this a little bit, and then some people we know started talking about this on social media. Old-time actor that you would know that he looks like.
Really?
Yeah, you want to take a look at him during the break? Study the picture?
Yeah, nothing popped up to me. The only thing that popped up to me was, and as I mentioned, I talked to my father yesterday because he's a Robbie guy and knows him well and wanted to talk about what he could do for the Phillies and everything else. I asked him, was his nickname always Topper? Because Dombrowski called him that like three times.
Yeah, I never heard that, yeah.
I had never heard that either, so I thought maybe my father knew. He said, Topper, what are you talking about? I said, well, Dombrowski called him Topper three times. He goes, I didn't hear that. I watched the press conference. I said, Dad, at least I can, I know what I heard. So he asks Virginia, my stepmom, and she goes, oh, yeah, they called him Topper three times. And my father goes, I guess my hearing is going. I'm not hearing what I used to hear. Topper?
Yeah, that I didn't know. I also, several people reached out to me and thought he was the second baseman from the Giants back in the 90s, and he's not that Robbie Thompson.
Oh, different Robbie Thompson, yes.
Right.
No relation.
Right. But do me a favor. Take a look during the break and see if he looks like anybody. And if anybody sees it, I'll invite you to call in. 215-592-9494. Might be a bit of a stretch, but it like ran through my mind, and then on social media I saw it a lot, so I thought, yeah, maybe he
does. All right. I'll give a peek.
All right, 215-592-9494. And coming up is one of my favorite features that I started doing with Ray, and I have Ray's blessing to continue with what we're watching. And the great thing this week is you and I are watching the same series.
Yes.
We'll compare notes.
You tuned me onto it. I didn't know it. We spoke earlier in the week, and I think I've officially moved ahead of you watching more episodes. It just means I got more time in the middle of my days than you do.
I don't know. 215-592-9494. Jody McDonald, Glenn Mack now, Saturday morning on 94 WIP. Going to have to cut a new open for that one. God bless Ray. I enjoyed doing it with all these years with him. And the funny thing is, Ray never watched TV. Ray goes to movies, Jody. He does not watch TV.
He's not a TV guy. No, I thought you were saying you had to change it because of Heisenberg. I would say, no, Heisenberg lives forever.
Oh, no, it's not the references, although some of them are skewing a little old. I mean, we cut that. Whatever, 10 years ago, I'll do it. But as much as I love Ray, who is on his way now to the Barnes & Noble in the Camp Hill Shopping Center to sign copies of his books from 1 to 3, Ray did not watch TV. But Ray often brought great commentary about the movies. And I would cover the TV. And today, you and I are watching the same show. So let me set this up. It's a hugely popular Netflix show called The Lincoln Lawyer. It was the top streamer in the country for, I think, four straight weeks till the new season of Stranger Things dropped last week. You watch Stranger Things?
I have not started yet, no.
But you have watched, you've watched previous seasons?
I have not, no.
Oh, you never watched Stranger Things. Okay.
No.
Okay, I watched the first 3 years. It's pretty good. It's seasons 1 and 3 are great. Season 2, not so much. But I don't want to get bogged down in that. This is The Lincoln Lawyer, based on a character created by the writer Michael Connelly. He's also behind the best-selling Harry Bosch franchise, which is another popular streamer. People will remember the movie from 2011. Matthew McConaughey played the lead character. He's a a wily, love the word wily, L.A. attorney who works out of various Lincolns. I think in the show he's got the SUV and the convertible as he goes from one courthouse to another. And, Jody, you're a big Michael Connelly fan, right? You've read both the Lincoln Lawyer books and the Bosch books, right? You're a good reader.
I think I've read everything that Michael Connelly's ever written, to be truthful with you. He is one of the best mystery-slash-drama writers that you're going to find. And I'm a proud fan of both he and Harlan Coben, who
yeah,
have both
turned me on
to
Coben.
A second living at becoming a creator of television programming on top of their great books that they've already written. So, yes, I'm a big fan of both. A bigger fan of Bosch than I am of the Lincoln Lawyer, even though this is real inside baseball. They are stepbrothers to each other, and they don't know that. And Michael Connelly winds two of his great characters together by making them stepbrothers. So, again, Connelly is phenomenal. And you turned me on to the Lincoln Lawyer. I didn't even know. I read all the Connelly Bosch novels. I watched the Bosch programming on Netflix as well, all the seasons that they went through, thought it was very well done and very well acted. And I did not know that there was even a Lincoln Lawyer programming put out. And yes, as you told me, I needed to check it out earlier in the week. Yeah, I watched all 10 episodes. I got them all in over the course.
All right, I'm 7 in. You got through it fast. I had a lot going on this week. And let me just say this. You turned me on to Harlan Coben's writing. And I've read several of his books and really like it. It was a big thrill for me when Harlan Coben started following me on Twitter. That was like
yes,
a deal.
You and I both.
Yeah, right? That's cool. He's a Jersey. I think he's a North Jersey guy.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So that's cool. I have not read Michael Connelly. I'm going on vacation next week for a little bit. I may take some of that with me and start to read it. Anyway, let me describe it and then we'll go back and forth on this. So as a show, Lincoln Lawyer, it's fine. It's good even. It's nothing spectacular. I think I told you it's closer to me than a network show than something put out by Netflix. And by that, I mean it checks all the boxes of your basic lawyer show. He's a smart but rough around the edges lead character. He's got these amazing observational skills, sharp legal wordplay, quirky side characters. He's got the beautiful, angry, but understanding ex-wife. In this case, he's got two of them. Some dramatic court scenes. I've seen it before, which doesn't mean it's not worth watching again. That's my basic takeaway.
Yeah, I got no issues with the quality of the drama, the scene setting, the writing. I don't look down my nose at network programming as much as you do. I still watch some network television.
Are you telling me I'm a snooty TV watcher?
Yes, Mr. Netflix. That's what I'm suggesting. Sorry to say.
You're probably right.
Here's my read on it.
You're right there.
Slightly better than you. I would go A minus, certainly a B plus, maybe even an A minus. Not an A or an A plus because it isn't. Right. Your comment of kind of been there, done that before. We've seen these legal dramas and there are a lot of similarities with others that we've seen before. But I think it's very well done. Here's my one rub. And I've read all the books. I've read everything that Michael Connelly's done. I didn't know or don't believe that Mickey Haller was of Mexican descent. He starts first episode, and he's got an accent.
Yes.
And as a reader, and yes, they did the movie, and Michael McConaughey certainly wasn't of Mexican descent, but you've got a picture in your mind. And he's got an accent. I go, wait a minute, this guy's not supposed to have an accent. And then they start to explain that his mother was Mexican and he moved back to Mexico with his mother, but then moved back to L.A. and his father was a former lawyer. I just didn't think of him as a Mexican guy. I guess you can do that when you're recreating something. It's kind of like the HBO show on the Lakers that they kind of took certain details and changed them around and made them more harshly cutting.
So you're comparing this to the Jerry West throwing the trophy through the glass window?
Yes, that's kind of what I'm comparing it to. You can take whatever license you so desire, but I will tell you that it threw me off to start things because he wasn't the Mexican guy in the books.
Yeah, well, I hadn't read the book. So that, like, and by the way, the actor's name is Manuel Garcia Rulfo, who I think is very good.
Yes.
Having not read the books, that did not throw me off, but I understand how that would be a concern. The only other actor I recognize is Neve Campbell, who is one of the ex-wives who I believe I can say that she has aged very gracefully since Scream 3 or Wild Things or whatever you last saw her in.
Wild Things was phenomenal. One of my all-time favorite movies. And yes, she has gone from a
love that movie.
Very young, just into her 20s type, tremendously attractive actress to a now mature woman, tremendously attractive actress. So yes, Neb Campbell still very much works for me. And as Mickey's first wife, she plays it to a T. Talk about comparing to the books. Yes, her character is much like the one portrayed in all the Michael Connelly Lincoln Lawyer novels.
So the basic plot line for this is that our hero lawyer is just out of rehab for painkiller addiction. Suddenly inherits the caseload from a big-time attorney who gets murdered. He's got to defend a high-profile killer, who, by the way, reminds me of Elon Musk, kind of the way they make that guy, in a seemingly hopeless case, all while wondering if the people who murdered the first big-time attorney are after him. Fair portrayal?
Absolutely. On point. I just hadn't made the Elon Musk comparison, but you're on point on that, too.
And there's intermingling plots and terrific scenery all around L.A., right? It really makes you want to visit L.A. A little violence, not much sex. It's from David E. Kelley, who produced Boston Legal and The Practice and Big Little Lies. So if you like those shows, you like this. I mean, Jody, here's my bottom line. And I don't mean this as a criticism. This is just how I view it. It won't tax your brain. It's bingeable. Well, you got through 10 episodes in about 4 days, so that attests to that. But as I said, it's kind of a streamer that could have easily played just as well on network TV. Fun, easy to watch, nothing special. L.A. Law meets Bosch, and I give it a solid B.
Yeah, I'd go better than that, B plus, A minus. And they do a nice job, and this is one of your jobs when you're producing these type of TV shows for a streaming service. You got to tease the next season. And they do just a good enough job at the end. They wrap up everything very nicely in 10 seasons, but they leave you just a little thread to be looking forward to the next time they come out with a season, which maybe you know. I don't know off the top of my head. That's one thing you always have to check into. Well, when am I going to get the next? If you enjoy it, you're enjoying it, you're going through it, you go, well, when are they going to come out with season number two? I don't know the answer to that question, but I thought they did a good job with that as well.
All right, so I need a book to read when I go on vacation next week. Should I read the first Lincoln Lawyer? I mean, I saw the movie 11 years ago, but I honestly don't remember it that well. Is that where I would start? If you were going to read any Michael Connelly to start, what would be the book I should read?
Ooh, so you've never read any Michael Connelly?
No, sir.
All right.
I read what you tell me to read. Again, you got me into Harlan Coben. I think I've read four of his books, so I'm ready to follow your guidance.
Well, then here's how I would lay it out for you, and you're going to decide for yourself because you know how much time you're going to have. Despite our singing the praises of the Lincoln Lawyer, I actually believe Harry Bosch is a better character, and there are more Bosch novels, I would say at least five, if not six or seven. So if you're just going for what is the best reading, yeah, I would start with the Harry Bosch
and go with the
number
start
of
at the beginning.
Through. Yes. Lincoln Lawyer is less. It became a character developed. And as I said, Michael Connelly's tied the two together, which is really interesting. And if you go Bosch first, Michael Connelly will be Mickey Hollow will be introduced through the Bosch novels. I would say Bosch a little bit ahead of Mickey Hollow.
I'll get the first. You know who I always rely on for good reading lists?
Who's that?
Merrill.
Really?
Merrill is a great reader. Yeah, you know what? I got to have Merrill on. I may have Merrill on tomorrow if he's available. I like talking football with Merrill. More than that, I like talking books because Merrill is always reading something interesting. And
yeah, but the one place you don't want to go with Merrill? His golf game. Because he'll just talk and talk and talk. And Merrill so loves golf. I get off on a golf tangent with Merrill, you may never get a football question in.
Yeah, he can do that. All right, Jody, I asked you the question. Now you had time to think about it. Does Rob Thompson look like any old Hollywood actor to you?
Punched up the picture and nothing clicked. I'm sorry to say, Glenn, I may be letting you down and I apologize
for that.
That's
okay.
That,
if it does, it does.
Yeah, it clicks or it doesn't, and nothing came off the top of my head. He looks like Rob Thompson to me only because that's all I know Rob Thompson as.
Okay. There's an expression called hangdog, which I think fits him. which is just kind of a little bit of a downcast looking guy, a lot of lines on his face. And I saw it a little bit, and then I think Ava Graham and Bill Matz both started tweeting about this, and many, many people agreed that he looks like Walter Matthau, particularly if you go back to Bad News Bears, which may be the team he's managing.
Oh, that's funny. I understand your use of the word hangdog, because Walter Matthau was hangdog.
Yeah,
no question about
that. He's the dictionary entry.
Right, you look up in the dictionary, and there's Walter's picture. I would not throw Rob Thompson into that same mix. He's not near as hangdog as Walter Matthau. That didn't come to me right off the bat. If Ava says it, then I give it credence. If Matt says it, then I dismiss it. I'll just go along with the fact that Matt has no idea what he's talking about.
Okay. All right, that's fine. 215-592-9494. 215-592-9494. He's Jody McDonald. I'm Glenn Mack now.
Here's a swing and a blast to left. That's going to be number five on the night. Second homer for Harper tonight. Solo shot, straightaway left field. And it's 10 on the board tonight for the Phillies as Harper with his 12th. Gives Philadelphia a 10-0 lead.
Well, there it is. When he can play, when he can bat, Bryce Harper has been amazing this year, but he has had to sit out a few times and clearly he cannot play the field, and that leads us to our question with our friend from Cooper Bone and Joint, Dr. Mark Pollard, who joins us today. Doc, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Good. We're fine. So we've discussed, you and I, Bryce Harper's UCL and him kind of playing through it, at least being able to bat through it if he can't throw. But it does seem to be getting worse. He was off earlier this week because it was sore. Two questions. Can he, by playing, is he potentially making it worse? And, you know, again, with always the caveat that you're not looking at his test results and you're not looking directly at his elbow, is there a certain point where you say, okay, we think we have to, you know, we have to pull the plug and go to the next treatment?
Well, in response to the first part, you know, can it be made worse by playing? And the answer, of course, is, you know, yes. Of course, there's always the possibility of the worsening things. Obviously, they have him kind of modifying his activities, you know, doing just batting and not throwing. The throwing really is what puts, you know, most of the stress on that area and the thing that's most likely to, you know, make things worse or, you know, complete a partial tear or something like that. And so in response to part two, you know, do you get to a certain point that you just, you know, pack it in and say, you know, it's time to do surgery? And that's kind of a slippery question. You know, the answer is kind of a moving target. You know, obviously, the goal is to, you know, have it heal up all the way and not need to have any surgery and not miss any time. But clearly, that's not necessarily the way things are going. And so, you know, it's sometimes, you know, certainly if the symptoms are getting worse, if, you know, they get, you know, another MRI or study that show that that, you know, things are actually worsening, you know, on, in the ligament, you know, the tear is increasing, then that would probably be when you would, you know, make the decision to shut it down and do the surgery. Obviously, if surgery is done, that would end his season.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think certainly they're trying to, the ideal situation, again, is to let it heal, you know, get it to heal all the way without surgery and then get him back full function. But it just doesn't seem to be the way things are progressing.
Doc, the Harper injury is not the only thing the Phillies were dealing with. Now they're going to be without their second baseman for a period of time. The other night, Jim Segura took a pitch on the hand, and he kind of casually walked off the field. You had the feeling that, uh-oh, caught him dead on the hand. This could be an issue. Find out, broken finger. I was hoping month. Found out two and a half to three, 10 to 12 weeks. How bad a break must it be if he's going to be missing that much time if the early diagnosis is on point?
Yeah, difficult to say. You know, I hadn't heard of him needing to have surgery or anything like that for it, so that's probably, you know, a good sign. But, you know, I guess if the fracture is kind of towards the joint or, in, you know, multiple pieces, obviously it's going to take longer to heal. You know, certainly some finger fractures. It also depends on which bone it is, how long it would take, and how long you would need to protect it. So obviously this seems to be one of the ones that takes a little longer.
Yeah, scary stuff, and their season kind of is on the edge right now. Dr. Mark Pollard, it is always a pleasure. Enjoy this beautiful weekend, my friend.
All right, great. Thanks, you too.
Thanks very much. Yeah, the Harper thing, Jody, I mean, I know, you know, what you said earlier I can't really disagree with, which is as long as you're in contention and he can play, you do it. But if they fall, you know, whatever, 15 games back, right, and it's the July 4th, and you know the surgery could take him out for 9 months, well, math to me says makes more sense to gear for 2023.
Right, but there are two sets of math here. We discussed this at the top of the show. I misquoted the baseball playoffs, the way they're going to lay out this year. Yeah, they're well behind the Mets, and the Mets are having a phenomenal season, and they may just run away and hide. I don't know that anyone can less than a third of the way into the season, but if you can, the Mets are it right now in Major League Baseball. But they're only three games out of the third wild card spot. So that is certainly something that's doable. And the other factor in this is, oh, by the way, Harper's being Harper, which is MVP-level production.
Yeah,
if the elbow was also causing him to not be able to drive the ball out of the park, and or he was struggling offensively, he was still a good player, but not MVP-level. He's still Bryce Harper like we know and hope Bryce Harper can be. So until we see a drop-off, and or he says, I'm having trouble swinging the bat as well, oh, I think they're going to keep Bryce Harper in the lineup on a day-in, day-out basis, truly, until they're mathematically eliminated from a wild-card spot.
All right, let's grab a couple calls here. Alan Winwood's got some thoughts on the Sixers. Al, thanks for joining.
Hey, guys. Nice to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
First, I want to praise Joel Embiid for being a warrior and going out there with multiple injuries. He's always done that. He's always been a warrior. He always plays hard. And he came in more fit this year. That was good. He played more games. So all that is very good.
Jody, there's a butt coming here. I just sense it.
The butt is, I need him to progress a little more as a complimentary player and as a passer. Some people are more retiring. He's the opposite. He tends to take everything on himself somewhat. So I want him to become that high, top of the key passer, which he very well could be, to get the other players to feel like they're going to get the ball, to be more of a team. I mean, when you look at the other teams that are still in this, Golden State, Miami was, Boston, I mean, one of the things you're struck by is they're a team. There's no egos out there. They're just trying to win. And the Sixers...
All right, let me take this and ask Jody the question that seems obvious out of this. Jody, who should Joel be deferring to here?
Right. Now that you have Harden going to be back for another year, it was a different team and a different type of offense they ran when Harden came aboard. I actually thought Joel made progress in being what the caller was just referring to, more of a team player, more of a better passer, setting up teammates, finding wide open guys. I think he took strides in that direction this year. He had the ability to take lots of strides because the caller's right. He hasn't always been great at that. It's been scorer, not much else. Just throw it back out, not without any purpose or setting someone up for shot. So I hope that he takes another step in that direction this year, but I would not make that something that is an issue or a problem with Joel Embiid. I wouldn't call it a strength, his ability to score the basketball, but I think he did advance his game in that way this year.
Other concern is Tyrese Maxey. I mean, I think he's the second best player behind Embiid, and I don't want to see him stalled by Harden. If Harden can't, unless he's been hurt, I mean, he showed clearly that he has difficulty getting around players. If he can't penetrate and you're the point guard, that's a problem. So yeah. Maxey can, and he has a huge upside still. So I guess I'm concerned somewhat that he is going to be developed as he should be, because I don't see a ceiling for him. I mean, I would say, is he a Trae Young player? Well, I don't know. Maybe I don't know if he's as good as that or not, but I think he could go in that direction. So
He is young and he is exciting, and I think there's a huge upside there. And Jody, I just think it does. I mean, he kind of alluded to it, Al, the caller, but I think it always circles back to Harden and what he's going to be next year. And the way this year finished was just so discouraging to me.
And we don't know that yet. That's the problem. If we knew that he was locked, he's going to be here, no question that this is it going forward. We're still sitting in that gray area in the middle because he hasn't opted in or opted out of the one-year contract. And until they do that, we're all just guessing at what the Sixers are going to be next year. And here's the thing about Tyrese Maxey. Phenomenal season. Starts the year. He's going to be the two-guard. Ben Simmons is going to be the point guard. Going to take a step forward. Oh, guess what? By the way, Tyrese, we need you to run the point because Ben doesn't want to play. He's sitting at home. And gets thrown out of practice, and off we go to the entire Ben Simmons drama. So he steps in as the point guard, does a great job, advances his game in season. Guess what? Here comes James Harden. Sorry, Tyrese, you got to go back to playing a two-guard and play with the ball, play without the ball in your hands. And, oh, by the way, he makes that transition back swimmingly and is phenomenal with it. He truly is the second-best player, as the caller stated. Here's the one thing about Tyrese. Don't put too much pressure on the kid. He was picked in the 20s. He made a massive, huge jump up here in year number two. Does Gus from Bethlehem call you guys on the weekend?
No.
He doesn't call you guys? Okay. Gus calls me. Gus is see no evil, hear no evil with the 76ers. And he actually said when Tyrese had the 38-point game to start the playoffs this year, it'll become a recurring appearance by those type of numbers and level of achievement. Like I said, that's just not fair. Don't do that to the kid. He has made such strides and has achieved such a level so fast. Don't expect more. Don't put too much pressure on the kid. And, oh, by the way, as you correctly point out, we don't even know what the fit's going to be next year because we don't know what Harden's status is.
I know. And to me, it always circles back to that. Chris in media. Oh, Chris wants to like the Phillies and Michael Connelly. Chris, start with the writer. What do you got on him?
So, I mean, the first thing you got to know is he's a Philly guy. He spent his first 10, 15 years. He was born here. His dad was a property developer here.
Is that right?
Yeah, so he grew up here before he went away to Florida and then eventually L.A. He's talked about it a couple of times in podcasts. He's a really – he really informs the reader about the place that he's writing about,
yep. Mm-hmm.
Which makes it a brilliant read. I mean, you feel like you're part of L.A. when you're reading his stuff.
So Jody says I should start on the Bosch novels. Do you agree?
You should definitely start with The Black Echo, which is the first Bosch novel. It introduces his first wife. It's before he has his daughter, Maddie.
Wait, Jody's doing it?
Not that daughter.
That is not the reason that I am as big a Harry Bosch fan as I am. The fact that his daughter has the same exact name that my daughter has. No, it's because he's that great a character.
All right, I'm starting with The Black Echo. Again, next week I'm going to have my feet up at the beach and that book in my hands. And by the way, I'm not as much, I don't like a Kindle outside. I'm taking a book.
You gotta buy the hardback.
Yep.
Read it on the beach.
Yep.
I was really afraid that this week I was going to be crying, listening, you know, not having Ray on, but having my old friend Jody on, who I go back to overnights with, is just amazing. You mentioned Maddie. Some of the best radio ever was when Maddie Mack was on with Jody Mack. So this is a great day for me to hear you guys reunited.
Well, I'm delighted, and thank you. I appreciate that. I'm sure Jody does as well.
Our pleasure. And, oh, by the way, speaking of getting books, you tried to steal my book last week, Mac. Now?
What book? Oh, yeah. Well, let's let Chris finish the call, and then we'll talk about that. Go ahead, Chris.
You guys can argue in a minute. So who's going to play second base for the Phillies now for the next couple of weeks? Because it sounds like the shoulder's bad for Maton.
Yeah, that's what – I mean, Todd said he couldn't lift it up yesterday. So I guess Camargo?
So, I mean, this puts us in a situation, you know, when you're looking at the infield, we've got, you know, a bunch of guys who are playing either out of position or really aren't great infielders. We've got, like, five DHs on team.
Yeah.
Is it time – so if we're not going to get Bryce Harper back – when do we begin to say, okay, do this? I mean, you guys just talked about July 4th. Is it do the surgery and do a sell? Because we got to do that before August 3rd.
Not happening. There's no way they're taking this team. They are going to have to so drastically fall out of it, as Glenn was referring to about Harper potentially going the surgery route. Same thing with the Phillies deciding, all right, let's take it back down and apart rather than build it back up. When you go 4 years for Castellanos and Schwarber at the numbers you did, it makes it tremendously difficult to do so. The only way they could do it, I had Jim Salisbury on with me during the nights this week here on WIP. They would have interest in their starting pitching. If you're going to keep Wheeler, because Wheeler's your ace and his contract is big too, so you might not get what you should get in return for a Cy Young level pitcher. Nola, Eflin, Ranger, they could move any of those guys, but then are you ready for Christopher Sanchez starting every fifth day for you going forward? And do you want to see Bailey Falter as part of your rotation?
Oh, God.
It would take.
The second one's an easy one. Chris, thanks so much for the call. Yeah, I'm not ready to do that today, but Chris mentioned August 3rd, so today is June 4th. Today's my son's birthday. Happy birthday, Ted. We'll call you
later. Happy birthday.
There you go. So that's 2 months away. I think I'll know better in 1 month.
Right.
Let's talk on July 4th, and I'll have a plan between the fireworks.
It's a conversation to be tabled. Agree.
So you mentioned stealing your book, and was so fun. So last week, last Saturday... you know what? We got to take a break. I'll tell the story as soon as we get back. 215-592-9494. Love to hear from you. He's Jody McDonald. I'm Glenn McNair. We're going to work the Eagles and some changes they made into the conversation coming up right here on 94 WIP.
Here's a swing and a blast to left. That's going to be number 5 on the night. Second homer for Harper tonight. Solo shot straightaway left field. And it's 10 on the board tonight for the Phillies as Harper with his 12th gives Philadelphia a 10-0 lead.
Well, there it is. When he can play, when he can bat, Bryce Harper has been amazing this year, but he has had to sit out a few times and clearly he cannot play the field. And that leads us to our question with our friend from Cooper Bone and Joint, Dr. Mark Pollard, who joins us today. Doc, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Good. We're fine. So we've discussed, you and I, Bryce Harper's UCL and him kind of playing through it, at least being able to bat through it if it can't throw. But it does seem to be getting worse. He was off earlier this week because it was sore. Two questions. Can he, by playing, is he potentially making it worse? And, you know, again, with always the caveat that you're not looking at his test results and you're not looking directly at his elbow, is there a certain point where you say, okay, we think we have to, you know, we have to pull the plug and go to the next treatment?
Well, in response to the first part, you know, can it be made worse by playing? And the answer, of course, is, you know, yes. Of course, there's always the possibility of the worsening things. Obviously, they have him kind of modifying his activities, you know, doing just batting and not throwing. The throwing really is what puts, you know, most of the stress on that area and the thing that's most likely to, you know, make things worse or, you know, complete a partial tear or something like that. And so in response to part two, you know, do you get to a certain point that you just, you know, pack it in and say, you know, it's time to do surgery? And that's kind of a slippery question. You know, the answer is kind of a moving target. You know, obviously the goal is to, you know, have it heal up all the way and not need to have any surgery and not miss any time. But clearly that's not necessarily the way things are going. And so, you know, it's sometimes, you know, certainly if the symptoms are getting worse, if, you know, they get, you know, another MRI or study that show that that, you know, things are actually worsening, you know, in the ligament, you know, the tear is increasing, then that would probably be when you would, you know, make the decision to shut it down and do the surgery. Obviously, if surgery is done, that would end his season.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think certainly they're trying to, the ideal situation, again, is to let it heal, you know, get it to heal all the way without surgery and then get him back full function. But it just doesn't seem to be the way things are progressing.
Doc, the Harper injury is not the only thing the Phillies were dealing with. Now they're going to be without their second baseman for a period of time. The other night, Jim Segura took a pitch on the hand and he kind of casually walked off the field. You had the feeling that, uh-oh, caught him dead on the hand. This could be an issue. Find out, broken finger. I was hoping month. Found out two and a half to three, 10 to 12 weeks. How bad a break must it be if he's going to be missing that much time if the early diagnosis is on point?
Yeah, difficult to say. I hadn't heard of him needing to have surgery or anything like that for it, so that's probably, you know, a good sign. But, you know, I guess if the fracture is kind of towards the joint or in, you know, multiple pieces, obviously it's going to take longer to heal. You know, certainly some finger fractures, it also depends on which bone it is, how long it would take and how long you would need to protect it. So obviously this seems to be one of the ones that takes a little longer.
Yeah, scary stuff, and their season kind of is on the edge right now. Dr. Mark Pollitt, it is always a pleasure. Enjoy this beautiful weekend, my friend.
All right, great. Thanks, you too.
Thanks very much. Yeah, the Harper thing, Jody, I mean, I know, you know, what you said earlier I can't really disagree with, which is as long as you're in contention and he can play, you do it. But if they fall, you know, whatever, 15 games back, right, and it's the July 4th, and you know the surgery could take him out for 9 months, well, math to me says makes more sense to gear for 2023.
Right, but there are two sets of math here. We discussed this at the top of the show. I misquoted the baseball playoffs, the way they're going to lay out this year. Yeah, they're well behind the Mets, and the Mets are having a phenomenal season, and they may just run away and hide. I don't know that anyone can less than a third of the way into the season, but if you can, the Mets are it right now in Major League Baseball. But they're only three games out of the third wild card spot. So that is certainly something that's doable. And the other factor in this is, oh, by the way, Harper's being Harper, which is MVP level production.
Yeah,
if the elbow was also causing him to not be able to drive the ball out of the park, and or he was struggling offensively, he was still a good player, but not MVP level. He's still Bryce Harper, like we know and hope Bryce Harper can be. So until we see a drop off, and or he says I'm having trouble swinging the bat as well. Oh, I think they're going to keep Bryce Harper in the lineup on a day-in, day-out basis, truly, until they're mathematically eliminated from a wild-card spot.
All right, let's grab a couple calls here. Alan Winwood's got some thoughts on the Sixers. Al, thanks for joining.
Hey, guys. Nice to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
First I want to praise Joel Embiid for being a warrior and going out there with multiple injuries. He's always done that. He's always been a warrior. He always plays hard. And he came in more fit this year. That was good. He played more games. So all that is very good.
There's a butt coming here. I just sense it.
The butt is, I need him to progress a little more as a complementary player and as a passer. He's some people are more retiring. He's the opposite. He tends to take everything on himself somewhat. So I want him to become that high, top of the key passer, which he very well could be, to get the other players to feel like they're going to get the ball, to be more of a team. I mean, when you look at the other teams that are still in this, Golden State, Miami was, Boston, I mean, one of the things you're struck by is they're a team. There's no egos out there. They're just trying to win. And the Sixers...
All right, let me take this and ask Jody the question that seems obvious out of this. Jody, who should Joel be deferring to here?
Right. Now that you have Harden going to be back for another year. It was a different team and a different type of offense they ran when Harden came aboard. I actually thought Joel made progress in being what the caller was just referring to, more of a team player, more of a better passer, setting up teammates, finding wide open guys. I think he took strides in that direction this year. He had the ability to take lots of strides because the call is right. He hasn't always been great at that. It's been scorer, not much else. Just throw it back out, not without any purpose or setting someone up for shot. So I hope that he takes another step in that direction this year, but I would not make that something that is an issue or a problem with Joel Embiid. I wouldn't call it a strength, his ability to score the basketball, but I think he did advance his game in that way this year.
Other concern is Tyrese Maxey. I mean, I think he's the second best player behind Embiid, and I don't want to see him stalled by Harden You know, if Harden can't, unless he's been hurt, I mean, he showed that clearly that he has difficulty getting around players. If you can't penetrate and you're the point guard, that's a problem. So yeah. Maxey can, and he has a huge upside still. So I guess I'm concerned somewhat that he is going to be developed as he should be, because I don't see a ceiling for him. I mean, I would say, is he a Trae Young player? Well, I don't know. Maybe I don't know if he's as good as that or not, but I think he could go in that direction. So that's my other concern.
He is young and he's exciting, and I think there's a huge upside there. And Jody, I just think it does. I mean, he kind of alluded to it, Al, the caller, but I think it always circles back to Harden and what he's going to be next year. And the way this year finished was just so discouraging to me.
And we don't know that yet. That's the problem. If we knew that he was locked, he's going to be here, no question that this is it going for. We're still sitting in that gray area in the middle because he hasn't opted in or opted out of the one-year contract. And until they do that, we're all just guessing at what the Sixers are going to be next year. Now, here's the thing about Tyrese Maxey. Phenomenal season. Starts the year. He's going to be the two guard. Ben Simmons is going to be the point guard. Going to take a step forward. Oh, guess what? By the way, Tyrese, we need you to run the point because Ben doesn't want to play. He's sitting at home and gets thrown out of practice, and off we go to the entire Ben Simmons drama. So he steps in as the point guard, does a great job, advances his game in season. Guess what? Here comes James Harden. Sorry, Tyrese, you got to go back to playing a two guard and play with the ball, play without the ball in your hands. And oh, by the way, he makes that transition back swimmingly and is phenomenal with it. He truly is the second best player, as the caller stated. Here's the one thing about Tyrese. Don't put too much pressure on the kid. He was picked in the 20s. He made a massive, huge jump up here in year number two. Does Gus from Bethlehem call you guys on the weekend?
No.
He doesn't call you guys? Okay. Gus calls me.
We don't talk to Gus.
Gus is see no evil, hear no evil with the 76ers. And he actually said when Tyrese had the 38-point game to start the playoffs this year, oh, it'll become a recurring appearance by those type of numbers and level of achievement. Like I said, that's just not fair. Don't do that to the kid. He has made such strides and has achieved such a level so fast. Don't expect more. Don't put too much pressure on the kid. And, oh, by the way, as you correctly point out, we don't even know what the fit's going to be next year because we don't know what Harden's status is.
I know. And to me, it always circles back to that. Chris in media. Oh, Chris wants to talk the Phillies and Michael Connelly. Chris, start with the writer. What do you got on him?
So, I mean, the first thing you got to know is he's a Philly guy. He spent his first 10, 15 years. He was born here. His dad was a property developer here.
Is that right?
Yeah, so he grew up here before he went away to Florida and then eventually L.A. He's talked about it a couple of times in podcasts. He really informs the reader about the place that he's writing about,
yep. Mm-hmm.
Which makes it a brilliant read. I mean, you feel like you're part of L.A. when you're reading his stuff.
So Jody I should start on the Bosch novels. Do you agree?
You should definitely start with The Black Echo, which is the first Bosch novel. It introduces his first wife. It's before he has his daughter, Maddie.
Wait, Jody's daughter?
Not that daughter.
That is not the reason that I am as big a Harry Bosch fan as I am. The fact that his daughter has the same exact name that my daughter has. No, it's because he's that great a character.
All right, I'm starting with The Black Echo. Next week I'm going to have my feet up at the beach and that book in my hands. And by the way, I don't like a Kindle outside. I'm taking a book.
You gotta buy the hardback.
Yep.
Read it on the beach.
Yep.
I was really afraid that this week I was going to be crying, listening, you know, not having Ray on, but having my old friend Jody on, who I go back to overnights with, is just amazing. You mentioned Maddie. Some of the best radio ever was when Maddie Mack was on with Jody Mack. So this is a great day for me to hear you guys reunited.
Well, I'm delighted, and thank you. I appreciate that. I'm sure Jody does as well.
Our pleasure. And, oh, by the way, speaking of getting books, you tried to steal my book last week, Mac. Now?
What book? Oh, yeah. Well, let's let Chris finish the call, and then we'll talk about that. Go ahead, Chris.
You guys can argue in a minute. So who's going to play second base for the Phillies now for the next couple of weeks? Because it sounds like the shoulder is bad for Maton.
Yeah, that's what – I mean, Todd said he couldn't lift it up yesterday. So I guess Camargo?
So, Andor, I mean, this puts us in a situation, you know, when you're looking at the infield. We've got, you know, a bunch of guys who are playing either out of position or really aren't great infielders. We've got like five DHs on team.
Yeah.
Is it time? So if we're not going to get Bryce Harper back, when do we begin to say, okay, do this? I mean, you guys just talked about July 4th. Is it do the surgery and do a sell? Because we got to do that before August 3rd.
Not happening. There's no way they're taking this team. They are going to have to so drastically fall out of it, as Glenn was referring to about Harper potentially going the surgery route. Same thing with the Phillies deciding, all right, let's take it back down and apart rather than build it back up. When you go 4 years for Castellanos and Schwarber at the numbers you did, it makes it tremendously difficult to do so. The only way they could do it, I had Jim Salisbury on with me during the nights this week here on WIP. They would have interest in their starting pitching. If you're going to keep Wheeler, because Wheeler's your ace and his contract is big too, so you might not get what you should get in return for a Cy Young-level pitcher. Nola, Eflin, Ranger, they could move any of those guys, but then are you ready for Christopher Sanchez starting every fifth day for you going forward? Or do you want to see Bailey Falter as part of your rotation?
Oh, God.
It would take.
The second one's an easy one. Chris, thanks so much for the call. Yeah, I'm not ready to do that today, but Chris mentioned August 3rd, so today is June 4th. Today's my son's birthday. Happy birthday, Ted. We'll call you
later. Happy birthday.
There you go. So that's 2 months away. I think I'll know better in 1 month.
Right.
Let's talk on July 4th, and I'll have a plan between the fireworks.
It's a conversation to be tabled. Agreed.
So you mentioned stealing your book, and it was so fun. So last Saturday, you know what? We got to take a break. I'll tell the story as soon as we get back. 215-592-9494. Love to hear from you. He's Jody McDonald. I'm Glenn McNamara. We're going to work the Eagles and some changes they made into the conversation coming up right here on 94 WIP.